welcome to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. I've been very excited to have this conversation with you, mainly because I like playing, who doesn't like playing, I don't know, army or whatever we want to call it. And I really, really love anyone that follows you. I'm just going to tell everyone right now that's listening, and we are recording this. I like this to be raw and natural. Everyone needs to follow you immediately just for the video content. I mean, I am a jiu-jitsu practitioner, and so what comes with that is many cops, military, whatever you want to call that, and people that have been locked up in jail. And then we all get together and beat each other up, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and we're all good friends together. And I had a brown belt who works at the submarine manufacturing, factory, whatever we want to call that. You would know better than me, in Kittery, Maine.
Okay.
And he was on subs for years and says that when he left, he actually just wanted to go back, which sounded ridiculous to me. And I would ask him about, you know, were there ever leaks? He's like, oh, hell yeah. He's like, we had a fire one time, and, you know, and I had to fix this, you know, thing on the sub in the middle of, I don't know, wherever they were, which you couldn't tell me because it was classified, and put out a fire and then fix this all underwater, which is crazy. So I'm assuming you have some good stories.
No, I definitely have good stories. And, you know, crap happens, man. It's just happens. I mean, that's why you train all those hours and you remember when it actually happens. So you really don't even think about it, to be perfectly honest. You just kind of do it.
So I don't know where to go with you. You are a general manager at a data center?
No, I was very, very fortunate. Got out of the Navy after 21 years, after my command tour. It's kind of my life goal. Been fortunate enough to work at, you know, Meta, AWS, and Oracle, but I kind of wanted to build something that was my own and that was lasting and try something new. So I had a mentor, Chris Crosby, CEO of Compass Data Centers, and he asked me if I want to come over and run his modular business that he had bought. So I'm like a incubated startup inside of a large data center company. Mm-hmm. And so really focused on more modular data center deployments. So it's really, to be honest, I couldn't have asked for a better timing with, you know, hybrid multi-cloud and AI. And
is this,
you know,
like off the grid type stuff that we have?
No, it could be. I mean, we're doing middle of nowhere and we're doing, you know, downtown. It's, you know, as people come back, you know, good example, as people come back from the cloud and they want a hybrid cloud, most likely their data center wasn't updated. So it's much easier just for me to drop something in their back because I can do it quicker, cheaper. And, you know, we use a composite, so it's a little bit different, something that's going to last, than them trying to, you know, kind of redo their old data center to make it fit high density racks or fit even standard compute racks.
Just, I find that any data center people, even closely related to data center people, are very happy people.
Oh,
people can't see this, but
business. It's like
they're very happy people. Coders, no, not happy people, not always happy people. I mean, if I'm going based on pure, absolute stereotypes and pigeonholing people, everything. Every data center guy I know loves his job, even if he's remotely connected to a data center. Every coder I know is somewhat, I don't know. I would like to say that they're happy.
Interesting supposition. I never noticed that, but I definitely guess data center people are happy. We're in demand. We're, you know, we can't
coders get are in demand. It's just, I mean, the job is fun. I just think something about, you know, well, you tell me what's the, on a daily basis, what do you have to play with? What do you have to do on a daily basis? I mean, is it racks and compute power and energy and plugging things in, or what is it? I don't know.
You know, as a incubated startup, it's about building a product, getting it out there and getting your first sales. Mm-hmm. I make it a little bit harder because I'm doing both DoD, federal, and enterprise.
Okay.
So it's just getting that stuff done. But to be honest, I don't have to convince anyone anymore. You know, probably a year ago, I had to convince people why this made sense. Now people get it. You know, modular data centers are flexible. They're cheaper. You know, you can deploy them with the same quality or higher quality than a hyperscale. And they're very flexible. So you can have, you know, a megawatt of 41 kilowatt racks of four Hopper chassis right next to, you know, when Grace Blackwell comes out, you know, eight Grace Blackwell 70, you know, N72, so they're 576, you know, kind of cluster. I just think it gives you the ultimate flexibility.
Talk more, please. Tell me more.
What more
flexibility? Why would I want a mobile data center? Do I ever need?
No, this is a mobile. Well, this is just a hyperscale quality data center that you can put inside your prem. So instead of having to do a stick build, which is permitting, you got to have the land, I mean, which will take you 18 months to 2 years. I can build a megawatt in, let's say, 8 months at a fraction of the cost. And I can guarantee my quality is just as good or better than a hyperscale data center.
Just since people might be listening, who would be interested the most in this?
It's your customers are everyone. That's the best thing. You know, most data center companies are going for the big seven, you know, the clouds and the platforms. I can go after everyone else. And most people who are considering this, they're not talking ones or twos. They're talking hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of these. So this whole distributed network, distributed edge, distributed compute, AI, you name it, it's all happening right now. It's just no one's talking about it because everyone's talking about large data centers and AI and everything. And we use terms like generative AI that happen to take a bunch of AI and jam it together when there's a bunch of, you know, four verticals of what that is. So does that make sense?
I mean, it's a little bit over my head, I'll be honest with you. I'm somewhat of a simpleton, and you are way smarter than me in this space.
I mean, just imagine it's, you know, people want time to market. You know, time to market, stick build, it takes a while to do it. When you actually have to do it, because you know, it's the permitting, it's the building, it's hire and fire, it's getting all that stuff up. Where modules are manufactured, then you bring to the site and you install it. And you can install one, you know, depending on how you're doing it, within, you know, 4 to 5 hours if you're using kind of what we're using. It just makes a very easy, flexible way to do it. The problem has been, you know, what everyone's version of modules is that rusty Connex box that's in the back, where they've been bitten, like I have, by Connex boxes that leaked. We're trying to solve all that by give them, you know, kind of something that's going to last a long time, but something that's just brings all that flexibility in, and we're not treating it as a throwaway data center.
Diesel routes, electricity.
Base load, or we can do microgrids, or whatever the person wants. I'm even trying to jam one in, jam's probably a bad word, but going to Idaho to try to attach it to a micro reactor so it approves the use case.
Average customer size, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. Our first customers are, you know, DoD and Fortune 40 customers. Mm. And I guess the difference is also we're doing this as an OpEx. So it's a service model. So companies that want to maintain themselves cash rich, or they're not sure about the future, we front the capital, we build it, and we lease it to them at our operating terms. So it's just like a big data center, just same kind of business concept, just put to coming to you instead of you coming to them.
You've got some old experience at Facebook. I had a cable guy that was cabling Facebook back in the day.
And who was that?
I can't remember. I'd have to go look back now, but I just remember talking with, I think that was 2007 or something when they're, how old is Facebook? How old is Facebook? I don't even know.
It's a good question. I don't know.
I know is that the cabling alone was ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very complex network, and it's an interesting design of that network. But it requires a lot of cabling, a lot of switches.
I find it fascinating. There's just a little box on a cell phone. It's just a little app. It's just an app, but it's this massive universe.
Yeah, it is an app, but it's a platform that integrates a lot of different, you know, software stacks under what that platform is. But to be honest, it's a great design. It has awesome failover capability. You know, they used to just randomly point to a data center. It's not random, but, and it's shut it down to see how, you know, Facebook does when you shut down that data center. So they're built to be redundant and resilient. And you can do that when you're your own customer. Very tough to do it when you're deploying, when you're waiting on enterprise to be your customer.
Mm. Can you swap that though? Now you just made me think, can you swap that? Did you want to be your own? Could you be your own customer if you weren't?
I mean,
probably not.
No, I think you'd have to build your own,
network.
I mean, there are companies that are popping up that are, you know, they're trying to do a GPU cloud, and in theory, they could be their own customer. But that's what this whole, you know, I guess they could be their own customer because there was a whole push to on-prem cloud. You know, you see sovereign regions, which they're deploying a cloud inside someone's fence line. You know, Oracle came up with that, I guess, 2 or 3, you know, I guess it would have been 4 or 5, 2 or 3 years ago, 4 years ago, where, you know, we just put a cloud inside someone's fence line or someone, you know, to give them data sovereignty, or they could go hug their servers.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our 1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
How did you go from, well, first of all, tell me some submarine stories or something, and how did you go from that to this?
You know, submarine stories, a lot of them, if I can't tell though, because it's all, you know, you quickly get up to that classification level where
I got you.
Can't tell it. Yeah,
but I can't talk with my cousin either, because he was Merchant Marines, and you know, he was laying cables forever, and I'm like, well, what do you mean? I can't tell you that.
I mean, I will tell you what I love most about submarines. You know, in today's age, to be a captain of an air, you know, a air squadron or a ship, you have your boss right there. So ultimately, you can always go to your boss and call them up on some sat hycom or whatever, ask them their opinion, or they're watching you on some kind of feed on a submarine. It's just you. You can't go up and ask your boss for help. You know, you're in a space that if you get caught, your front page is CNN, and all these world leaders are going to read about you, including the president. So
has that ever happened?
I can't say anything of that.
I'm just trying to think of the last time that something like that has happened.
That alone should tell you something. But I mean, so it's the last vestige of you're alone and unafraid out there. You're out there, you know, 40, 38 years old, commanding a submarine, you know, average age is like 22, and you're out there on the
front. How do you deal with that psychologically, like being down 8 months at a time or something?
Everyone's a volunteer. You can't be forced to go on submarines. And you kind of just, the people that don't like it, just kind of, they weed themselves out. So, and you do have some people that you have to medevac off, but that's very rarely when that has to happen. Most of the time that you're all good. But I tell you what I love about submarines is that it's just the something you don't get it in the outside. It's the mission and it's the team. I mean, the team is your 130, 140 people. Guess what? You're all going to die as one. You're going to succeed as one. It's a very different than working on the outside, the way you kind of come together. There's officers enlisted, but there's not really, you know, no one really treats that as a differentiation. Like, you know, I'm an officer, so you must call me sir all the time. It's more, you know, people working together to accomplish a mission. It's so hard to describe to someone who's never been on submarines. It really is, you become tight, because you make a mistake, you all die.
I think you did a good job.
It's something I miss. And I often, you know, I posted this week about it saying, hey, military, I know you want to get out and you can't excited to get out, but you were never going to have this sense of mission and sense of purpose and sense of team ever again. You just don't get that in the outside. I'm not saying companies are bad or well-intentioned. It's just different. And people will miss that.
Yeah, like real brotherhood.
Yep. And sisterhood. I mean, you're all, you know, submarines are mixed. So, but it's just, it's just such a hard thing to describe where you're living together day after day, succeeding or failing as one.
No, I think you did a good job. Live or die as one is, you know, that's pretty much, we have to work together. There is no other option. It's not like, you know, you can just be kind of half bought in.
Yeah. I mean, if there's a fire, guess what? Where the hell are you going to go? You have to go towards the fire and put out the fire, because if you don't,
you had that happen?
Everyone's had casualties. I mean, never, not nuclear stuff, just, you know, you have other problems.
Electrical problems
or, you know, motor problems or something like that. Never anything with the nuclear side, just with, you know, non-nuclear components.
And obviously you're just not going to answer what you can't answer, but what was your longest deployment?
You know, I think, you know, most of the time you deploy 6 to 7 months, you might spend 90 days is probably the max you'll ever go away from port. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've done 100-day one away from port, you know, just a lot of that's been submerged. And that's when your cooks are great, because they have to get super, super creative. You know, you do 90 days underway and you are eating like the last of the last of the last. You're like beanies and weenies and Spam. That's what you're eating. And they have to get super creative. And that's why the submarine force spends so much money on all their CSs to culinary school, because that's what makes people happy. And you got to get super creative at the end.
Completely shut down ever, just sitting on the bottom of the ocean.
We're all nuclear, so you can't do that kind of stuff. Diesels can, we can. You always have to keep moving.
Always moving.
Yeah, we don't have, I mean, you can hover, but you can hover.
Is that because someone will always know where you are? Someone will always be able to target you at some point or something?
I think it's just dependent on the mission, because the benefit of a nuclear reactor means you can go anywhere and go anywhere quick. So it's unlimited fuel. So a diesel can't do that. They're, you know, plowing around at a very slow speed on the battery, but they're super quiet, or they're recharging the batteries and they can go a little bit quicker. So the nuclear gives you a lot more flexibility to get to places than a conventional diesel sub.
That's pretty sweet.
Really cool. But you know, how I got into this is, you know, a submarine has like 12 megawatts of IT load. I mean, think about it. It's a container-based system that you have a sonar. You want to be able to switch over servers. So they're pretty modern right now. If you actually look at some of these submarines, I mean, have the new Virginia class, they feel like you're on a Starship Enterprise. Mm-hmm. You know, you have fire control on one side, sonar on the other. You have the pilots up front. It's not traditional helms and planes. It really is a different look, but it's a lot of it's computer based. So it's not that hard of a transition. It's easy to transition because mechanical, electrical, you're dealing with that. But now you definitely, submarine people know cloud. They just don't know they know cloud.
It says the first thing that when I Googled that came up, deadly quiet. How quiet are we talking?
Yeah, very, very quiet. I mean, what you're doing is you are looking for like single narrowband tonals, like, and every submarine is different. This isn't like Jonesy and you have a stupid computer, you push it through though, but every submarine is different. You might have a pump that has a different winding of that pump. And so instead of 300 hertz, it puts out 305, you know, 301 hertz, and that's how you know it's that kind of submarine. And it's just Baron and Doppler, because there's no active, you're not going active, you're trailing them just on passive.
And you is there internet down there?
No internet.
There's no going to the cable in the middle of the ocean.
It's different. You know, when I was first as a JO, I mean, you had a thing called a family gram, so it was 50 characters, I think, and you got five or six of them on deployment. So they would, you know, their family would write you and send out this family grab and you read it. But now, you know, they're my XO and CO, it's where they got internet. I mean, they got email, so you could actually send and get email. You you'd always download the email. That was like, you cleared all your radio message traffic, make sure you got all the email packets to get down, and then you go submerge and you distribute all the email.
But the, so you have to come up. You have to come up to get it.
You have, you have to come up and you have to contact. You have to get a satellite. You have to log on a satellite.
This is fascinating. I love this.
But here, now imagine this. You actually have to look through the email. Because the last thing you want is an email that you can't do anything about. You're going on mission and, you know, someone tells something that they're just going to stress about. So a lot of people choose not to hear that because you can't do a damn thing about it. So, you know, a lot of that, some of that emails you're holding on to until, and you're talking to them towards the end of it. So they don't know. And plus you get some interesting emails too. Let's just say, everything from I'm sleeping with your best friend, this is it, it's just, I've seen everything on email. You know, people try to, there's word filters, they write in Spanish, different languages. It's kind of funny.
Yeah, that would be miserable.
You got to do it though.
Yeah, that would be difficult.
Yeah, but it's not like, you know, carriers nowadays, you can get on Facebook, you got your Starbucks there and everything. You don't have that in the summer, and you're really, it's definitely, you have to let go of the outside world.
There's a Starbucks on the aircraft carrier?
I think it's Starbucks on aircraft carriers. Like 5,000 people. No, I really admit, my first time on a carrier, I did look at the aviators. They had like this drill going on. You know, in a submarine, everyone participates in a drill. And the aviation squadron shut the door and they were playing Guitar Hero during a reactor drill. It was very, very tough for me, you know, because you can't do that on a submarine.
It's very few times that I actually get shut down on the show. I'll be honest with you. It's very few times that I'm a lack of words.
But it's, you know, it's what builds the military and how they do their networking, how they transmit information. It really is no different than how the cloud does it. You know, even nowadays, the same conversation I'm having with DOD and what I'm doing for DOD is the exact same conversation I'm having with enterprise. There's no difference. And so that's what, you know, I really try to help veterans out a lot, where I don't, you know, my whole thing is don't limit yourself. You know a lot more than you think. You don't have to go in and be an ops person. You probably know a lot more about engineering, a lot about product, a lot more about sales than you think you know. And that's where I think the veterans are not helped by hiring, where they try to jam them in where they think they belong, or they pay them lower pay because they can get away with it. I mean, there are kids out there who are E3, E4 junior enlisted with family that are on food stamps, or they're going to the local food bank to be able to survive. And it's just so wrong on how we pay the military.
Okay. So, I guess just take a few minutes then to tell me what the advice is, or what,
where
you want to go there, because I have, it's kind of one of those sensitive issues where I don't usually go there because I wasn't in the military, but I've had numerous people that were on the military on the show, and I've had many conversations offline after the show, and they tell me things like, Phil, we can't talk with people like you. We can only talk with each other.
I think it's worth, you know, I like talking about this. I mean, you see all my posts I put on it. I'm glad to talk about it. When there's no community is great. I think shifting from a military to civilian is a lot harder than we're led to believe, because everything is different. We always were like, well, I have the same leadership. It's different. It's 100% different. Cause on a ship or in a squad, you all think the same. I don't care what background you're from. You're ultimately, you think the same. On, you know, when you go into civilian world, no one thinks the same. They're all different backgrounds. They're different generations. They have different motivations. Like, and I think the easy lame answer is to say is, well, this new generation doesn't like the work. I posted something about this recently. They just know they're just a different generation. They have different things that motivate them. Not like you're motivated. You just got to figure out what that is. You don't have to do that in the military. Very hierarchical, very top-down driven. In the end, you can just say, you know, Phil, do it because I told you to do it. And you might argue and say, no, that didn't ask. I ordered you to go do that. And so that's ultimately what you can fall back to on leadership. But, you know, we do learn a lot in the military. It doesn't matter if you're a soldier, if you're doing artillery or tanks, the modern technology that we learn, and what people don't outside of it, since they haven't been in the military, is they don't understand that. And we're trying to do stuff now. I'm starting with the Navy and try to get that out to the Air Force, Marine Corps, and Space Force and everyone. We're showing these hiring managers and leaders, you know, what we actually do. In fact, we're going to have a trip out, you know, to a carrier with some tech leaders here in June, just to show them what people do. Like, I honestly think they'd be amazed at what these kids who are 18 years old are learning to do, you know, for their country, and the kind of, you know, software, computers, and networks that they actually work on, to give them, to let them know that, you know, we're not just a one-trick pony. We're not just janitors or ops people. We can do anything that out there. And what you get with a veteran, you don't, what you can't find, you know, it's very tough to get. It's, you get loyalty and you get will. You can teach skill all day long. You can never teach loyalty and will. And that's the best thing you get from a veteran.
Probably some ability to handle things under pressure as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's what makes me stress is not what makes everyone stress. Like, to me, you know, you're trailing some other sub, you're in some exercise area, you know, if you get caught, you're in trouble. That's stressful to me. You know, I missed a timeline is not stressful. It's very different. You definitely handle stress a little bit different on that kind of stuff. Well, I mean, it's a, which is good and it's bad. You might be perceived as blowing off your boss just because you're more cavalier about it, but it's just a, it's definitely.
What do you mean more cavalier? Because you're like, yeah, no,
it's just, you know, you see people who haven't been on that, they get super stressed out over timelines and deadlines and everything. And it's, to me, you get stressed over life and death, not because you might have missed some, you know, some sprint that you were doing. You can just push it to the next sprint. It's not like Phil's not going to die if I miss this sprint. They might be mad with me or might be upset, but ultimately, I've been yelled at before. I can be yelled at again. I'm not going to die.
Can we just go back to an environment where everyone yells at each other?
Makes things easier. It does make things easier, but it's wrong. I mean, it's wrong, but this is the thing I'm trying to get at, you know, with the military.
Is it wrong? Because that's my parenting style.
I think no, it is. I think it's an easy way to do it, but in the end, it's not. And it's just white people end up yelling. It's just their own ego feels threatened in the end, I think.
Yeah, I like it.
You're trying to motivate that person. But some people need to be yelled at, let's be honest. My kids, one kid needs to be yelled at. The other one, if I yelled at them, they would, you know, give me the middle finger and walk off and do something. It's just, you know, no difference. Some people need that hand on the shoulder. Some people need to be yelled at. I mean, by yelling at them, you know, belittling or anything.
No. I had a boss tell me once, it's like, he used to ask me, is their bucket full? Like, if they're like, bucket is totally full and they're like your number one performer all the time and everything like that, then you treat that person different than the person that's like, you know, I don't know, real vanilla and new and learning. And like, you know, you just can't expect them to like know everything.
I think we, in the military, oddly enough, we don't have a zero defect mentality. We have a thing called, if something happens, we like to point the finger, yes, but we like to point the finger because we know who did it. We like to draw out the lessons learned. We like to train everyone on those lessons learned. So you were expected to fail and everyone learns. But if you fail again, that's not good. But you are expected to fail. I think sometimes...
You mean make the same mistake again.
Make the same mistake. Yeah, exactly.
You're allowed to fail multiple times, just not the
you're
same.
You're allowed to fail multiple times, just not the same mistake. And even if you do fail the same mistake, it might be something different because you might be tired or, you know, you were put in a bad position because it's the end of the workday. But I think we in outside almost have this zero defect mentality where, you know, we're told that our whole life depends on getting this right. And you wonder why people, you know, cheat, or you wonder why people do things. If you put that kind of pressure under someone where their livelihood is dependent on them completing something, you know, you are not going to get the best work out of that person, despite what you think.
Zero defect.
Yeah, it's a zero defect. Go look at...
Wait, what do we call it? No, is it zero defect or what is it called?
It's a zero defect mentality. It'll drive behavior differently. And so this, you know, let's go back to the Navy submarines. We at a time.
So what's the correct mentality called? What do we call the correct mentality?
Yeah, it's a learning culture, you know, expectations. Okay. No, there's definitely egregious stuff you can't cross, like anything where it affects, you know, like reactor safety or something like that. But you know, anything short of that, you will make mistakes and that's okay. And you just have to learn from it. But I think we need to bring that attitude to the civilian world too, because too often I attribute my success to your success. And that's why I micromanage you, because I'm really afraid if you mess up, that I mess up. And so that's why you get leaders who micromanage, because they can't let go of their ego. And you know, they don't want their ego to be bruised ahead of them. So that's why they micromanage to people that are kind of under them. And I fell into this before. And it's just, but once you recognize that a lot of your decisions are driven by your ego, and you're okay to sit there and say, I don't know, or I'll find out for you. Or, you know, we always feel like we have to have the right answer, and we expect that from our people. So we just need to accept people are going to make mistakes and learn from them. Let's be honest. So a smart person, I could tell you all day long how to do something. Until you screw it up, you're not going to do it. Now here's the trick though. You got to make sure they screw up by hitting a ditch, and make sure they don't hit that telephone pole, because a telephone pole is going to kill them, and a ditch is just going to make them learn.
The fail forward mentality.
Yeah, exactly.
Fail forward. They don't teach it in school. There's a lot of things they don't teach in school.
But I think we're not set up for that.
Are we getting weaker as a country?
I don't think so. I think it's just a different generation that requires different motivation. I think it's an easy way. You know, if you look back on that thing I posted, it was like since 1933, it had newspaper clippings back. It was almost the same thing, saying this generation doesn't like to work. They don't know what to talk about. It's just different. And we got to accept that. And you got to learn that every person needs to be managed differently. But I don't think we're weaker as a company because of it, a country because of it. Trust me, go down to your base, go talk to your sailors in the military. They're kind of a cross section. And I think you'll see that, you know, that they are very dedicated, and they still have that kind of dedication. Now, people who don't join the military, I think they just view the world differently, but they can have that same dedication. You just got to lead them right.
There's a change. There's definitely a change. Again, like you said, people are people. All around the world, and I'm sure you've seen a lot. People are people. It's not like they just grew up in a different generation and have access to different things, I guess.
Yeah, well, consider this. You know, when I was 5 years old, 6 years old, I would go outside and play and come home for dinner. What do we do with our kids nowadays? We make them carry a phone so we can always check in on them. You know, they never get that kind of independence, and we are constantly checking in on them, getting rules. And also they have this social media, which they communicate friends and they communicate self-worth with their Facebook. Like if you look at, there's a great book out there, which kind of associates, you know, what depression in this generation really when Facebook started having likes on it, because that's how they view their self-worth. And so that carries over into the workforce. People, you know, they view their self-worth by being praised, by, you know, getting that trending video and stuff. And you got to understand that. And so, you know, I didn't have to do that. You know, a pat in the back was all I needed, maybe a handshake or something like that. You can't do that with the generation that's right now. It's just different.
All right. So how do we do it? We got to turn up a Facebook page for the company and start liking content, or what?
I think it's just, you got to figure, I mean, you also don't want to cross the line. I mean, I think you have to have a hard discussion where people might not want, you know, people tend to shy away from hard discussions. I think with, you know, leading some people right now, you have to have a hard discussion. I think people want to work well. They have to just know what the expectation is, and you can't expect them to know what that expectation is. And so,
you need to lay that out clearly. Setting clear expectations is very important.
Recognize they might not want to be praised in public. Some people are very afraid of being praised in public, or singled out in public too is another downer. It's just, you have to understand what motivates it. It's just harder now because so many different nationalities, so different backgrounds. But if you do it right, and you like, I think people, when they look at management, they contribute success to how many people I have, and they're okay with 20 directs. You can't motivate and you can't lead 20 people. It's impossible. You need to look at how do you get a team that you can actually spend time and motivate. And if you're a manager, guess what? You shouldn't be writing stuff. You should be helping them develop as leaders and encouraging them. They should be doing the work. But I think we do it the other way around, which we feel like we have to do 20 people's worth of work ourselves. And that's what I think people struggle with. And as they get more and more people, they try to keep on doing more and more. The pressure goes up, the ego starts to kick in, and they become, you know, even worse of a leader.
It's when does the leader, well, I have so many, first of all, one of the things that I think was very, very beneficial, that I think can be very beneficial, and we could maybe brainstorm this right now because you can help me where I fill in the gaps, was doing a self-evaluation form for my team members.
Yeah.
So you can do a self-evaluation form. So you don't even have to do the evaluation. You don't have to do the quarterly or yearly evaluation yourself. Just give that to them and have them rate themselves. Like, level of organization. Like a 10 in this category looks like, you know, I use all the tools given to me. I'm constantly looking at different ways of using new technology and calendars to communicate with people in a streamlined way, whatever it is, right? And a 1 is I wait for people to remind me that we had a meeting today and show up 5 minutes late with my throwing my shirt on, you know, I don't know, yeah, whatever it is. You know, do like a self-evaluation form, let them evaluate so they know what success looks like in your category. But I want to hear from you what questions we should be asking them. So like, for example, how do you like to receive feedback? Whatever, like what else should we have on there?
Yeah, how do you deal with interrupts is the one thing. Like I'm okay with interrupts. I don't mind, you know, I have ADD. I'm very much like squirrel. So you can, me drop too, and you can drop any interrupt on me, I'm fine. Some people, they don't like that. They plan their day, they plan their week. If you interrupt them, you know, it gets them off kilter, they're unhappy. You know, you just got to understand the people you're with. But I think the biggest thing is just what your expectations are. I think we make the assumption that if I was to tell you, Phil, I want you to do this, that they can read your mind. But they might not read your, you know, they can't read your mind. And to be honest, they might see something differently if you were. And they might, you know, it's this idea of what you said and what they actually heard. And you have to make sure that's the same. Too often, I think we make the assumption that since I put it out there, they heard exactly what I said. And that's why you have to have that discussion of, what do you think I meant by this? What's the time frame you meant by this? How are you going to get it done? It might seem kind of micromanaging, but I mean, this is a source of all arguments in my perspective. I don't think anybody wants to come to work and say, I'm just going to blow off everything today and set up my chair. And I think we assume people are ghosting, but I think those people are unmotivated, but that's another story. But I think we got to, you know, kind of...
Remind me of Office Space, just like, yeah, you know, I usually come in, I sneak in about 15 minutes late, try to sleep in the back door so Lumbar doesn't see me. And then I space out for about 1 to 2 hours and I just stare at my desk. It looks like I'm doing work, but I would say on any given week, I probably get about 15 minutes of actual work.
Exactly.
Done.
Exactly. And you got to recognize that and recognize and motivate people. But in Zen, we'd like to throw people at problems instead of fixing problems. And But going back to what I was saying about the argument, I can guarantee if I say something to you and you get upset, you're going to get off that call and you're going to tell yourself a bunch of stories about, I can't believe my boss just did that. Am I going to get fired? Am I whatever? But if you actually short circuit that, and if you ever have a problem, we're worried about that and say, hey, you know, Phil said this, this is what I'm saying in my head, and you resolve the problem. I think if people actually had that honest conversation where they could have that honest conversation where this is how you, and yes, it is touchy-feely and I get it, but you know, when you said, you know, you're an a-hole, that made me feel like blah. Some people could care less. I, you know, in the military, whatever you want to call me sounds good to me, but some person, you know, made me feel like they're going to get fired tomorrow. But it's, you know, what's the story you're telling yourself? No, this is what I actually meant by saying you're an a-hole. It was wrong. I probably shouldn't have said that, but I was trying to say you need to get there. You have to have these honest conversations and recognize that everything revolves around communications. Just because you pass something doesn't mean that they heard it. And another thing is, you know, this idea of cognitive dissonance, which is when we wake up in the morning, we look in the mirror, we're always going to say, we do a good job. Even if they mess up, they're going to try to justify why they messed up. And you have to recognize that kind of stuff. And that's the cognitive dissonance where they're always going to come back, look in the mirror and say, hey, I'm doing a good job. And so you have to reach them and show them how to get better without bruising that ego. And so they just go back to the fallout term saying, Phil doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
Well, that's why I like the self-evaluation. Because yeah, you can go through and you be completely honest with yourself outside where I'm not there. No one's there to answer these questions for you. I'm just telling you what is expected of your role in this. And you can go through and rate yourself on these. And where do you think you need help? And then you can come to me and ask for help somewhere in this area. To me, that's very helpful.
No, I would agree. And, you know, my first, you know, what the biggest suggestion I had when I left the military was don't do anything for 90 days. Because you have to learn how the civilian world works and you have to understand that there are similar problems that you face, but different solutions. So, you know, we come in and we have a 9 o'clock meeting. A lot of people don't show up for the 9 o'clock meeting. And I was like, you know, what the hell? Why don't you show up for the 9 o'clock meeting? It turns out some people live 2 hours away. And so they prefer like an 11 o'clock meeting. And I was just imposing my will. You have a startup meeting and you talk during that time. And so it's, you know, you just can't make those kind of assumptions. And by what you're talking about, the self-assessment, that's how you level set everything. Hey, you know, some people think they're a 10 if they just show up to work in flip-flops and maybe a hat and they write a sentence down. But some people will view it differently.
What's the balance between, so if the military does a lot of things very, very well, and there's this kind of...
Well, they don't do a lot of things very well, trust me.
No. The things that they do well, is what I'm saying. And there's other things that they don't do well.
Yeah.
But the things that they do well, whether that be whatever works from for example, one of the... Because there's things that society does not do well either, right? Which is everyone's entitled to their own opinion and everyone's right. And there's no, you know, we all are thought leaders nowadays and right. And like what it really is a thought leader versus the guy that actually.
My favorite is what's a servant leader? I'm a servant. What does that mean?
I mean, I think that means I work for my people. I go to give the people the tools that they need, and I ask them what they need, and I ask things like, "What do you think I meant by this?" And how would you like to receive feedback? To me, a servant leader is doing everything that we just talked about. That to me is a servant leader.
But everyone says they are. Do you think they really are? I guess is the point where it's like
everyone wants to be seen as a good leader, when in reality, everyone thinks that they could be the better leader. And my answer to that question is put everyone in a room with where they can all write down all of the things that their leader could do better on a piece of paper, and then have one random person type up all that advice, put it in a vanilla envelope, and send it to you. Yeah. So you have no clue what actually, you know, but. That would be a real servant leader, being very humble and ready to like go cry yourself to sleep at night.
And that's really the thing. It's the ego. If you're a true servant leader, you're going to put your ego out there and you're going to get punched and you got to be okay with it.
Oh my gosh. I've cried myself to sleep almost.
I think a lot of people have problems with that. They recognize, and I've even felt victim of it too, where it's, you got to recognize what your ego is going to make you do.
Once you realize that everyone hates you, you'll grow. Once you realize that everyone secretly talks about it behind your back, and you know no one really is your friend, you'll quickly learn, and you'll quickly be like, I'm horrible.
You can't make everyone to that point. You can't make everyone happy, and if you try, you're just gonna kill your team. You can't make everyone happy.
What's the balance between we can't be like so crazy, like, you know, no direction, no discipline,
no
lack of military to, what's the balance in between? And I really feel for people when they say we're coming back into a civilian society and we're like, isn't there any order around here? What is wrong with everyone? How does anything get done? What is this insanity that I have to put up with? I don't know.
I think it's a balance, and I think it's something you just have to get through and figure it out yourself, but it also really depends on your team too. I think some teams you could be a little more hands-on, some teams you can't. And you just got to figure out what that is. But you do have to draw the line somewhere. Like, you know, you have to draw the line. But I think we as people don't like to have those tough conversations. We'd rather just ignore it. And so when you ignore it though, you're screwing the other person because they don't know at how they're going to get better. So. We're afraid of that. We're afraid of that conflict, and we're afraid of that truth to power, and we're afraid to bring it up to our boss because, to be honest, the boss makes it hard because he screams at you or is very tough to approach, or he's not a servant leader or says, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The I think some of the best mentors I ever had forced me to have the tough conversations. What did they used to say? Have the tough conversations or whatever it was. And like, I don't know. I just remember a lot of coaching conversations where I had to really map out what was going on first. I really had to be a good listener. I really had to be empathetic. I really had to sit down and say, hey, you know, I heard this the other day. I heard this whatever it is came up, and what I just want to hear, like, is that true? Like, you know, what really happened? What were you thinking? What was going through your head? Like, I don't know. I just want to hear like what's going on, and then just sit there and listen.
Yeah. And I think what we also mistake too is, at least in the military, you know, for 20 years I was taught leadership from day one. I might not have gotten right, but I have lots of scars on how to do it. I think some of these people, they get to a higher level up there in IC, and we suddenly go, you're now a leader, go forth and be a leader. And then when they screw it up, we're wondering, how did they screw this up? Even though they've been given no training or anything, they just been told to go out there, you're now a manager.
You're talented. You're talented. You did the best in the group. Here you go. You're now a leader. And they probably exactly. should have been the last person that should have been the leader. Maybe the guy that did the worst should have been the leader.
Exactly. I mean, I think people's talents lie in different areas. And I think you have to give them the tools to be successful. You can't just sit there and, you know, some people will do. I'm not saying everyone's going to do it, but I'm saying people will do a bad job. You have to give them the tools that they need, or you have to give them the space to fail. And I don't think we do a very good job at that. I think we are a zero defect kind of group.
Oh, gosh. Once you're the leader, you'll realize real quick. And like, that's why I tell people, like, look, I'm not a leader. I don't want to be the chief. I'm great at taking orders. Just give me the orders. Anyone that's ever been a member of a nonprofit organization or been put on a board and said, yes, okay, I'll join. And yes, I'll be on the administration. All of a sudden, quickly, you're like, oh my gosh, what did I get myself into?
Yeah.
Especially in a nonprofit, because you cannot choose who is a member of your community. It's just the community. It's everybody out there. There's no, there's just nonprofits are very, very hard because a lot of it's volunteer work. Anytime you're dealing with volunteer work or anything like that, you don't have a choice. You don't choose who's in your community. You've got elderly and young and everybody out there. And you've got the guy that got out of jail, and you've got the guy that's trying to deal with this and that. And then you've got people with marriage issues, and you've got all of this stuff. And it's very, 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 very difficult. So
sounds like nonprofits like leading in the military.
What?
It's like leading in the military. You can see everything you just said sounds like a military.
I just was like, why did I say yes to this? Please fire me. Please. You can't quit. You can't quit. You said yes. You were chosen. You were chosen. You can't quit. No. Please. I'm just give me orders. I would love to go back to just taking orders.
No, but I think different sectors do it differently. I think the tech sector is its own little microcosm of idiosyncrasies, just like the marketing sector, the sales sector. It's just, we have our own little different problems in each thing of the sector. I just know tech well, because that's what I've been doing, but I do see stuff like an investment banker is going to feel like very different than what a tech person thinks. It just is what it is.
No, but when it comes to the end of the day, when it comes down to IT leadership or someone leading the helm and has a group of people underneath them, everything that we just talked about is very, 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 very relevant.
Yeah.
And I'm just trying to think of the things that might be different when it comes to, I don't know, technology and technology leaders and the things that we might be missing on. I don't know. Is there something that we're missing on?
Like, it's something. I really do think it's the fear of failure in our ego drives us to everything. And it might be just because that's what your boss expects, at zero defect and crap rolls downhill. I think we got to recognize the way smart people learn is they make mistakes, and you have to give them the freedom to make mistakes. You just have to make sure when they make a mistake, they're not hitting that telephone pole and shooting themselves in the foot and killing their career. But you have to get them the
ransomware free. And the whole company shut down and goodbye, we're done.
Because you have to get them, like I used to, if you had a paper, let's say you're at a company that likes to write a lot of papers, and you take that paper and rewrite it for the person because you're afraid the boss is going to reject it because you know the boss. What is that teaching the person? Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Guess what happens when the next paper comes up? You're going to rewrite that one too. Just send them. But what you're doing is afraid that that person is going to represent you to the boss, and by transitive property, that your boss is going to get mad at you because of that. In reality, the boss should get mad at you because you should be taking responsibility, but you have to let that person do it.
What if it's a really big paper that's going to get published? What if it's a really big paper? That's nothing my is, problem. My problem is, like, this is too big. My like, no, this is too big. We have to be careful on this.
Did someone die? No. Then they can. For me, it's just a very high thing.
And what if someone will starve to death? What if someone will starve to death?
Well, starve to death, that's probably good too. But for me, and I wish I could say I'm perfect on this. I'm by no means perfect on it. When the stressors come in, you think, there's what you feel like when you're not under pressure, and there's the way you act when you're under pressure. They are two totally different things. So you got to look at yourself.
I'm feeling very insecure right now.
What's that?
I'm going to be very vulnerable right now. I'm feeling very insecure. You want to give me a coaching conversation?
You have to do that kind of stuff.
How about this though? What's the opposite though? Because the other thing that I love to do is say, yeah, you got it, man. There you go. You, like you said, you're now the leader. You're it. Go for it. And then that's it.
No, that's the way it should be. If you own the solution, guess what? You're going to be invested in that outcome. If your boss owns the solution, let's be honest, you're not going to be as invested. You might be invested. It's because of fear. It's you're exactly right. Go out. This is your thing. Let them learn it. Let them be invested.
What should we do? What guiding question should we ask? Like, hey, how do you think we can improve results here? Or how do you think you can become more of a big deal? What should we be asking?
Ask questions early. Don't let people waste 40 hours a week on something when you know that's not going to work. Let them come to the answer. Don't tell them what it is, but don't let them waste a bunch of time. Give them your guidance of how you feel. You know what I mean?
Could this possibly be a massive fail? I'm just curious. Where do you think this could be really stupid? No.
Yeah, but save them. What you want to do is make sure they're doing work that's good work. But you want to make sure that if you know something is a problem, that you let them know, but you can't do it in a way where they feel like you're telling them what to do. It's just, hey, why do you feel like this? Have you thought about this, this, and this? And I can guarantee you make them ask the five whys, and you're helping them ask the five whys, and you teach them to be curious, guarantee they will come up with the right answer themselves. But don't let them waste an entire week. But if you get in early, ask questions, be curious, have them ask questions, you will stop them from wasting work and time.
This is such a selfish podcast for me. I'm loving it. I'm feeling, again, very insecure. This is everyone out there, this is a leader. This truly is a leadership podcast. How about this? You're on a submarine.
Yep.
That's it. We've got what we've got. That's it. There's no firing someone. What are you going to do? Go send them to just go sit in the bunk for the next 90 days? No, man. Yeah. You got someone in the wrong seat on the submarine. You got someone in the wrong position on the submarine. We're on the submarine. There's no, the ship has already set sail. It's already sunk. We've already sunk the ship. What do we do?
This is easy. And every person who's been on submarines will appreciate, it's off going sonar soup. Come to the con or leave the sonar soup. Sonar soup, take your watch section down to the wardroom and we're going to have a critique. It's very easy. Upgoing person comes in, you slip them in, and you make sure that you get the lessons learned from that, but you don't put up with it. You cannot let that, if they make a mistake, you have to correct it immediately.
Where does the old person go if they're in the wrong position? Submarine. We can't go anywhere. Where does that person go?
Are you talking wrong position?
Yes. I'm talking we have made a mistake. This person should not be in charge of the torpedoes because they know nothing about how to, I don't know. Who knows? We have just decided.
It's easy. You have the ultimate say. You would sit there and say, you don't have it. This person has it right now. Give me your keys to the ammunition or whatever.
Where do we put that person? Where does said person go?
It goes to crank, goes to clean in the galley or goes to. Goes to wash dishes or shoot trash. Shoot trash is one.
What's that?
What do you think you do with the trash? You basically compact it. You put some weights on it and you shoot it out the bottom. It stinks. It's tough. You just put them doing that stuff. They have all the time where you get disqualified from watch. You make a mistake, you get disqualified from watch. You have an upgrade program before you can ever come back in. Sometimes you're permanently disqualified and you're lined out of the watch bill. And then we have to figure out what else to do with you.
Is there a criteria? Is there a shooting trash criteria? Like if you do this, you will go to shooting trash. If you do this three times, you will be going to shooting trash,
I think it's a balance you have to make on how your submarine is and what point you're trying to make on your submarine. There's definitely, they have a thing called a mast too. Like I can take you to mast and in theory, put you on bread and water. I can dock your pay. I can lower your rate. I mean, there's a whole load of things that you can do that because you're not just doing it for that person. You're doing it for everyone else because you're making an example out of it and you're trying to prevent behavior. But usually the easiest one is really, it's just
That's the capital punishment argument. Yeah. Which I happen to agree with. It's not meant to punish one person. It's meant to prevent preventative measures. The bread and water. What kind of bread?
I don't know. Whole wheat, maybe some sourdough. Whatever they get.
Sourdough's great.
Honest, I've never assigned someone bread and water, but you sure as heck can keep it on Liberty, and that's bad enough. You've seen all your friends go out on Liberty, and you're stuck on the boat. That alone is enough to.
That's worse.
That'll drive someone's behavior.
How long is Liberty?
Really depends. You know, it's sometimes it really depends on your rank and where you're at. But, you know, junior people might have to be home from 10, and, you know, the chiefs and officers might have to be home at midnight. It really depends on where you're at and what the threat level is and that kind of stuff. Or you can be really creative, though, and say at the end of the night, you have liberty as long as I'm off the boat, but you have to be in 50 feet. You have to be within 50 feet of me. You know why that's good? It's because then all the drunks come to you and you could help them back instead of just having them come back themselves.
You must have so many stories. You must have
I have so many stories. And I have so many stories. This is why my hair is like this. I have so many stories, man.
To be honest with you, you look a lot younger live than you do on your LinkedIn profile. I don't know if that did I deliver that message correctly? Can we have a coaching conversation with how I delivered that message?
Yes, you did. Direct feedback is what I like, and I got to figure out how to do it.
I mean, honestly, I did not think I would see someone this young and good looking. Is that the feedback that you would like to have?
I like that feedback, and my ego likes it. I don't know if it's necessarily true, but I appreciate it.
It is absolutely 100% true.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
I mean, you have a very authoritative LinkedIn profile picture. I'm sure if we put this through some kind of AI, like you know, rating function, you'd get at least a 79.
Oh, I have a bunch of pictures from my summary days that I could put up there, and definitely not. definitely not look like an authoritarian picture.
I don't know where to go. This has been an absolute pleasure. Let's leave it with this. Are there any conspiracy theories? We don't have to name any of them. Are there any conspiracy theories that you may happen to know are true?
I know I've yet to see a USO, so I don't think aliens go inside the water, and I definitely haven't heard them. Like, they make it sound like the submarine picked them up.
But the flip side is
the aviators have seen them.
And you believe it 100%. UFO is just an unidentified flying object.
To be honest, it could be us. I've seen stuff that we have. That, you know, you get up to that level and you see some secret squirrel stuff, and you would be separate. You might not know because you don't have the right classification to know what the heck that is.
How about the whole Duns? This whole Duns thing that seems to be like taking over the internet somewhat, like these underground tunnels and stuff. I mean, I do know from being in DC for a long time, if you just live in DC, like, you know, for a lot, you just know this crazy stuff. Like, oh yeah, the three underground bunkers that hold 50,000 people that are good for the nuclear half-life and all that type of stuff. But then
I'm sure that stuff's out there. I mean, it is, they're not going to tell you about it because it's going to make panic and that kind of stuff.
Any other really cool stuff that we need to talk about? That way I can say, if you listen to the whole episode and we won't allow you to fast forward, you will hear nothing classified.
Nothing classified. Let's just say I've had several close calls. Some of the stuff I've done, it makes Blind Man's Bluff look pretty tame.
Have other people had close calls that they didn't live to tell about?
Yeah. I mean, you've seen submarines have ran aground before on charts that weren't updated, going super fast.
Ooh, how fast can the sub go, nuclear sub go?
You know, 25 plus knots underwater.
That's like, what, 30 miles per hour or something like that?
Yep. And you can go infinite. I mean, you could do that forever. So it's, you don't have to come down and conserve fuel because you're just burning some neutrons.
What are we doing to make more oxygen down there?
You use hydraulics. I mean, you basically take the water and you split it off, pump the hydrogen off board, and
they can do that fast enough.
But yeah,
that's pretty sweet. Yep. They're basically a massive rebreather.
Yep. Guess what? A great way to make people more productive. You crank up that oxygen. People are awake.
Yeah, but we're getting
people high. To make them tired. You crank down that oxygen. People get tired. You have a whole thing called field day. And you crank up that oxygen big time when you're cleaning this. When you're cleaning that sub every single week, you crank that oxygen up, so everyone's like awake and energized.
Sweet, dude. Giant squids.
I have not seen a giant squid. I have hit a whale, though. I think we had a whale strike when I was at JO, just in the middle of nowhere, just driving your sub, and the whole sub
boom,
lurched up. It was not a problem with that. I don't know what else the damn thing could have been.
So you can't see it. Is there any like?
You can't see it. No, there's no windows on it. Like I said,
but can you? Is there like cameras? Can you look out of the sub underwater? There's nothing cool to look at.
No, you're watching.
Come on. There's no like, you know, cameras.
No cameras. It's just you're looking for sound and you're looking for sound propagation and all that works. And when you become very, very good at sound propagation and you know how what sound does and then the ocean, and how salinity, pressure, temperature all vary it. You can hide. I mean, there's plenty of ways you can hide in the ocean by knowing what the bottom type is, hiding behind mountains, so you know the sun will get reflected. There's a lot of stuff that you do.
How cool is the darkest depths that, well, we can't probably go, can we go very deep though?
Like, we can go pretty deep, but we also have other things that we can push out our submarines that can go pretty deep too.
That's cool.
I can guarantee if you think about it, they've done it.
Sweet.
Anything you think about, they've done.
Weird underground caverns or something. I mean, you know, these weird rivers.
That's like that. Okay. You know, I think the best times are in a submarine is when you're trailing someone else's submarine and you know that captain of that other team thinks they're full of, you know, they're like, you know, they think they're the best of the cap in the world and you're just trailing them for days and days and weeks and weeks.
And they don't know?
And they have no clue you're there. That is the best feeling in the world when you're putting a smack down to someone else's submarine. And you're trailing them, they had no clue you're there.
Do they ever find out and you let them know? And you can be like, haha.
I mean, yes, you will go. There are some times when you will. It's a very deliberate. You make sure they know, A-hole, I know you're right there. So get away from my carrier strike group. We have you. And that's when you will go active and you will, or you'll drop a bunch of sonar buoys on them so they don't know you're trailing them, but you will do a prosecution.
Is there like this whole, like, you know, kind of like what you've seen from all these underwater movies, like various different ways of like divers leaving the sub? Is there any time divers leave the sub underwater?
Oh, yeah. Come back and that's what I did. That's what I did for speed ends. Yeah. We had a DDS chamber. So they went out, they had their own little submersible, did some sail stuff, come back.
Mm-hmm. How good is the technology nowadays for a human to leave the sub? Like how depth, because I'm a certified diver, so I only have the basics, but like how,
you know, you can go pretty deep. Imagine, you know, all the mixed air breathing and everything. So they can go pretty deep and do that stuff. But you know, a lot of the times the divers are, you know, the SEALs don't do all the work. We have Navy divers too, that support the SEALs. And so just because you see someone doing deep diving, more of the time we're like a Navy diver. And like on some of the videos that I post, they're not the SEALs, but the Navy divers that we had on our GN.
Yeah. So the diving videos, like up against the sub, like that stuff there is just, I could watch that all day long.
Yeah. It's unique and it's fun. And I've got great stories. I just wish I could tell them. But I tell you, you lose that clearance, you miss learning what's going on. I go to these Ross and DOD stuff and I'm sitting there trying to figure out what's going on as much as I can. That's why I'm excited to get my clearance back.
Sweet. Well, sir, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I don't know. We talked a lot about leadership. I don't think the,
And to be honest, I didn't get it right. I know we didn't get it right. I have a ton of scars, so you will fail, but it's how you fail and you get back up is the only way you're going to learn.
Just a shout out to your company, just for the sake of it. Who should we be sending your way?
Anyone who wants to upgrade, their on-prem data center, they need to deploy in the middle of nowhere, they need to have high density racks, all under a kind of an OpSec solution. And we work with some of the best, like Dell and HPE, and we work with Verizon, AT&T for transport. So, we can give you a full turnkey solution. Also, our stuff is rated as a F5 tornado shelter and a category 5 hurricane shelter. And if you're nice to me, you can come shoot it with an AK-47 or a 50 cal. Or you can use a flamethrower on it too, if we really like you. It's indestructible.
50 cal, AK.
We build them out of composite. So we don't build like traditional modules. It's composite.
We should do like an event. We should do like a 50 caliber event.
If you want to come down to Florida, you can have all day long. You can shoot it.
I'm leaving for Florida tomorrow.
You can go and shoot it and do everything you want to it. It's indestructible.
Are you guys providing the guns? Because I don't know if I can get my hands on a 50 cal by then.
Yeah, we can provide guns.
What else can we do? How about RPGs? I've always wanted to fire.
It can handle. It was built for it was built for upgraded ballistic armor and Humvees, so we'll handle 6 pounds of 6E4 at 10 feet with 20 meter red ball bearings. I actually have a picture, but I could share a picture with you after the fact of us explode it.
Can we make that the cover of this episode?
Yeah, I mean, I could send you some pictures of people shooting.
Let's send Greg Liddell, my French producer, by the way. Let's get these pictures. Let's do this for this episode. We need to do something special, crazy divers and squids and stuff like that.
Nothing like shooting a 2x4 at walls. It makes you real think about what kind of shelter you're going to go in for tornado.
There was one last. Do you guys do international stuff? So,
yes.
Okay. Yep. So like, other countries that, might need this type of stuff.
Yep. Definitely reach out to us and we can give you references and customers and DoD, who we're working with right now.
Yeah. I think we need to do a Dissecting Popular IT Nerds partnership. We need to make you guys a special vendor of choice, special, crazy, vendor of choice. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.